Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Throughout today's show, we've been hearing from so many of you considering sperm donation as a way of becoming a parent. It's often a very viable option open to same-sex couples, heterosexual couples and single women who wish to take the next step and have a baby. But what is involved exactly? Well, to answer those questions, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by fertility nurse specialist and donor sperm coordinator at the Waterstone Clinic, Ursula Lynch. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen. How are you?
I'm good. Ursula, can we begin by chatting about the process for same-sex couples, heterosexual couples and single women who make contact with your clinic? I mean, what happens first?
So initially, they have a consultation with a consultant and a fertility nurse. And in that process, it's like a fertility check. They explore the person's hormone results and do an ultrasound scan and see if this is actually a viable option for people and if they might need any further investigation to go on and then to discuss treatment options from there as well.
Okay, so there's different options of treatment.
Yeah, so when you're considering using donor sperm, there's two ways we can do treatment. One is with IUI, intrauterine insemination, and IVF. So it's dependent on if somebody's their fertility assessment on what might suit them and on what they're interested in themselves as well.
Okay, and if somebody was to come into you, what would make them an absolutely no-no candidate?
I suppose a no-no candidate would be where when we do the fertility assessment that maybe we find that it isn't as we'd like it to be, where their ovarian function doesn't look as well as it should do, and
gotcha.
That maybe treatment might not actually give them a baby out of it. So we have to be realistic and we have to be honest with people about that.
Now, I understand there is a mandatory session with a counsellor. How important is that for someone or a couple before they begin this journey?
Yeah, so I suppose it's really important. I suppose when we consider counselling, everybody thinks of, oh gosh, the classic counselling of, you know, talking about your childhood and all that. But this is counselling in terms of ensuring that they're confident in their decisions and their journey and then the treatment that they're choosing and seeing, you know, if they're going to be okay, if treatment does work or it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that's probably really important to discuss as well if treatment doesn't work.
Exactly.
So after that session with the counsellor, in the first meeting with you, what do you guys discuss?
So it's quite a lengthy discussion.
I'd say so.
I go through the process from initially what blood that we require to be able to match with a donor. I go through the legislation that's in Ireland. I go through what banks we use. And basically then I bring them through the websites and show them what donors they can look at and what's involved in the profiles of the donors. We discuss then costs and we discuss what treatments, because I suppose I wear two hats. I'm a fertility nurse specialist and I do the donor side as well, so I can come at it from both sides. So yeah, it's quite an in-depth conversation we have for the first meeting.
And what can you tell us about the legislation that came in 2015?
Yeah, so it came under the Children and Families Relationship Act, and it was originally written so that finally same-sex couples both could go on and be registered on the birth cert for the babies. And under that, then the government also brought in the law surrounding anonymity with the donors. So donors used in Ireland have to be open donors, non-anonymous. And then they also set up a National Donor Conceived Persons Register. So anyone undertaking treatment, their information, the donor's information, and hopefully a baby's information will be held on the National Donor Conceived Persons Register and allows that child, when they turn 18, to be able to apply for access to the information on their donor.
And can they make contact with that donor? And is there any protection for the donor? Sorry, because we're getting a lot of text messages in from guys as well, who are a bit unclear. If somebody wanted to become a donor, for example, would that child come looking for them? What are the children's rights financially? All that kind of stuff. Is there something that's signed or how are they protected?
So the donor agrees to it from the start. So like they're brought through the process. It's quite an in-depth process the donor goes through in order to become a donor. And they do sign a consent form to say that in the future that they'll be open to being contactable. So I mm-hmm. suppose if somebody isn't open to being contactable, then they shouldn't consider being a donor. And most of them want to be a donor to genuinely help people. They've either grown up with single, you know, parents themselves, or they've known a same-sex couple that have gone through it and they've seen the benefits of it. And they do it really for, want to help people.
Okay, so how do couples or single people decide on how many straws, vials of sperm they purchase?
So your head's on me already. So it's great because normally I have to talk about what straws are.
Yeah.
So like it looks like a straw. That's what it gets frozen in. So when we talk about it, we talk about straws as in numbers. One straw tends to do per treatment cycle. So as I say to everybody, it's a fine line between buying enough that you have enough for, you know, enough treatment goes, but not buying too many so that you're paying storage fees for years to come and you're kind of left with deciding, you know, what to do with them. So the averages people tend to buy is 2 or 3 straws. If they're considering sibling, or if they're considering in the case of same-sex couples where the partner might want to use the same donor down the road, then they might reach more to kind of 4, 5, or 6 straws.
Okay. Is this where the cost goes up? Because we were hearing from women saying it's costing around $5,000, but I suppose that depends on how many vials of sperm they purchase.
Yeah, it is. And it also depends on what bank and what profile of donor as well they end up purchasing. So the straws cost vary between 800 to 1200 euros, depending on what donor you choose, what bank you choose, and then you have your shipping costs on top of it. So if you're looking at a cost of about 2 straws, you're looking at anything between 2,500 to 3,000, and then you have your treatment costs on top of it. So it's difficult to say this is going to be the exact cost. But I suppose when we meet people, you know, we go through that in depthly of like what they know, what the, you know, what at whatever stage, what would it all cost.
And I suppose there's storage fees for, you know, keeping the straw.
Absolutely. Anything you freeze has a storage fee. So it works out about 25 euros a month to keep. And that's for whether you've 1 or 10 straws. So, it's a set fee.
And where did the donors come from? Are they all from Ireland? Are they abroad? You said you talked about the sperm travelling or whatever. Is that because the sperm comes from wherever?
There isn't any sperm banks in Ireland. So we use 2 sperm banks from Denmark. So, So Denmark it comes from at the moment.
And why isn't there any sperm banks in Ireland?
There isn't any set up. And I suppose there isn't the legislation supporting it as yet. So hopefully down the road that would be something that will change.
Is that something that would make life easier if we had a sperm bank here or no?
I suppose it would. It's not a big deal to, you know, a lot of the donors are students. The sperm banks we use, a lot of the donors are recruited in the UK as well. So they're very relatable donors. So people don't tend to mind that it's coming from Denmark.
No. Danish people, not at all. Okay, so for couples or individuals who have listened to the show today, you know, and are interested, what do you need to consider if, you know, you want to make that call? What do you need to really think about?
I suppose if it's for you, there's going to be a child come out of this. Is this something that is this the dream you're looking for? And hopefully we can fulfill that. And also just to be realistic and timing as well. Unfortunately, as we're all too aware that fertility does have an effect after a certain age. So time is of the essence sometimes, and not to leave it too late if you are considering it.
What's the optimal age range?
The optimal age range. So from 35 onwards, your fertility starts to decline, unfortunately. And it kind of when you get to age 38, it starts to rapidly decline. So you know, I suppose it's a catch-22 because you have to be ready to do this. So, you know, you have to be mature enough. And I know this is for you, but equally, you don't want to leave it too late where it's no longer an option.
Okay.
Find the balance.
Find the balance, yeah. And I suppose, like Jan said, she was concerned about her own fertility at 28 and she got checked out. I suppose the big message here is if you are concerned in your late 20s or whatever, go or earlier than that, get checked out and make all the difference if this is something that you want to do down the line, right?
Yeah, like information is power and that's knowledge. And that's really important, because you could be told everything's great, you can come back in a few years, you know, or you could be told, actually, it's not as good as we thought it is, but you do have a window of opportunity here, and maybe you might want to consider acting sooner on it. So I definitely think, look, if you're considering it all, you know, fertility assessment, it isn't a big deal. And the beauty of fertility clinics is you can self-referral. So it's not like the part of medicine where you need a referral from a GP, and you can just make that phone call.
And can we just talk about time? Is there a waiting list? Like, let's say I wanted to go and, you know, get this done. I make an appointment. Am I waiting 6 months, six weeks?
No. So it's average between about 4 to 6 weeks to see a consultant. And in that time, you need that to be able to do blood tests, actually. Because if you're going to come to the consultation, we want to make it worth your while. So we do need certain blood tests done on certain parts of people's menstrual cycle. So so it's just to see the consultant. And then it's not a huge amount of waiting time to see the counsellor and myself. You might just be waiting 3 or 4 weeks. And then the donor process then takes about 3 months, just in terms of blood tests coming back, choosing a donor and shipping the donor. So it's not a huge amount of time, no.
And you know, when you're choosing a donor, do you get like a book with pictures and profiles?
It seems like that. There's websites, and they're pretty extensive. People are always very surprised at how much information is available on the donors. So there's pictures of them when they were a baby, voice recordings, lots of information on their personality and their interests and hobbies, into their family background in terms of their parents and grandparents, their health, and then the health of the donor. And then there's a handwritten note from the donor as well, kind of either explaining why he did it or just wishing them luck. And there's also an aptitude test as well the donors do, just on their personality.
I'm getting a lot of texts in still. Someone texted me saying, I tried 9 times and I'm now eventually pregnant. Yay, this texter says. But just to mention that obviously it can cost a lot more than 5K. I think we covered that, didn't we? If it doesn't work the first time, worth it. But be prepared for the potential cost. And another text says, not wanting to open a whole can of worms, but why does the sperm price differ? Is a doctor's sperm more valuable than a bin man? Good question.
No, it's more to do with profiles. There's profiles where there isn't as much information as, so an extended profile is the most common one, where that costs about €800 per draw. And it really depends on how much information the donor has given on themselves.
Okay, gotcha. Well, listen, Ursula, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I would be
interested to know how many calls you get off after this conversation, because we've talked about it all morning, and it's something that you don't hear discussed as a really viable option for women.
Yeah,
because we've done whole shows on people not meeting the right partner, and they're running out of time and they want to have kids, and this is a viable option if it's something that you really want to do. So thank you so much for your time. Maybe we'll check in with you and see, did you get an influx of contacts and calls in the next coming weeks. Best of luck with everything, Ursula.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
There we go. That is Ursula Lynn. She is a fertility nurse and specialist and donor sperm coordinator at the Waterstone Clinic. There are a number of clinics throughout the country that can facilitate sperm donation. So please visit their website and just pick the right one for you. Also, it's really worth mentioning that you should really just chat to your GP if you are seriously considering sperm donation. You can visit the hse.ie for all the information you need on fertility treatment. And I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who contributed to our chat today. And please let us know if there is any other topic you would like us to dedicate some time to on the show. And you can do that by emailing us, jen@rte.ie. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.